If your brain is at full capacity with to-dos, birthdays, dinner plans, meet Skylight Calendar. It syncs your entire family's schedule onto a sleek digital display, so you focus on important things, like where you left your coffee. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to skylightcal.com/talk. Go to skylightcal.com/talk for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That's skylightcal.com/talk.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Today is April 27th. The West Coast trip is over. Some good, some bad, and certainly some ugly. 3-3 overall, but could it have been better? Possibly. Let's get into it. You're listening to the Bridge to Bucktober podcast. Good evening, Inskies. Thank you for listening to the Bridge to Bucktober podcast, where we talk all about them Pittsburgh Pirates and that. My name is Jake, and tonight we're joined by one of our good friends, Jim Rosati from NS9. What's up, Jim?
What's going on, Jake? Thanks for having me on tonight.
Yeah, see, you're pulling some double duty, but like you said, it's fun, right?
Always a blast to talk about these Buccos, Jake.
It's never dull, right?
Never. And they always leave you with enough stuff to talk about too.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Josh has been down for the count this week due to some bronchitis and laryngitis. So, did you actually get a haircut?
Yeah, I was thinking about dyeing my beard for this and just like making it all red, but
that's funny. That's funny. I do want to go a little bit briefly over the first leg of the trip in Anaheim. First off, like we're heading out to the West Coast. We're taking on a dare I say mediocre. Like they're not bad, they're not good. Anaheim Angels or Los Angeles of Anaheim Angels, sorry. And then the behemoth that is the Dodgers, but we start off in Anaheim and really anything really jump out to you on during this series, Jim?
There were a few things. One, David Bednar came back, looked good. I thought, there was the excellent start from Andrew Heaney.
That was insane.
You had the questionable decisions with the Carmen Majinski start. And then also Mike Trout, the Pirates own Mike Trout, Jake, which is the most weird thing in the world. The dude's homered against 28 other teams. And the only two teams he hasn't homered against are the Angels and the Pirates. And his OPS is like below 400 now against the Pirates. Like it's insane how much we own Mike Trout.
Yeah. Which, you know, one of the best ever play, right? Like, arguably, I should start that with arguably one of the best ever play. It is crazy. And Heaney starting off the way he started off that game, what was it, his first six or was it seven?
I think he struck out the first six. Yeah.
First six, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just wild. And then the first hit he gives up was Travis d'Arnaud just being a savvy vet, sticking the barrel of the bat, just poking it down the line. But yeah, definitely some fun games out there. Good games. You know, you have the offensive route in game one. You have, let's give it up for Matt Gorski. First career at bat, first career home run. Like you love to see that. I think they said on the telecast today, 4 Pirates have done that.
So I know it hasn't been done since Marte. He was the last one to do it.
Yeah. I think I saw somebody even say, I forget who tweeted it. Somebody was like, you know, it was a fun and interesting game to watch, even though you had Kevin Young on the broadcast.
On the late night games. It's and you know what? I love Kevin Young's insight. Like, I think he's a really so good analyst. It's just his voice is so soothing. Just like,
yeah,
it's like a lullaby. I always need
story at night.
Yeah. I got to pound caffeine on those West Coast games or I'm not making it.
Yeah, I feel that. O'Neal Cruz kind of got his, his hot streak started and he got it started a little bit before that, but really, really took off in Anaheim. The leadoff homer against Tyler Anderson, who's having a really good season to this point. And second pitch he saw, just blasted it. Then he had the fifth or sixth inning home run the game before that was hit like 460 some feet.
Oh, I mean, he is locked in right now. And you can just tell, especially with like breaking stuff when pitchers are, they're trying to get him to chase a little bit. And he's just spitting on the pitches. I don't know if I've ever seen him in a stretch like this before where he's just this dialed in.
Yeah. I think I looked it up. I don't still have it pulled up, but I looked on Baseball Savant and I think he has four home runs off of a fastball, three off the breaking stuff and one off an off speed pitch or something like that. Like, he's just sitting on them, man. He's punishing mistakes, which is what you're supposed to do as a good major league power hitter.
And I don't know about you, but like, I think the move to the leadoff spot, like, really helped him, because especially that first at bat of the game, the pitcher has to come to you. And a lot of times the pitcher is trying to like get ahead quick. So like, they're trying to just get that strike one, like right off the bat. And what you're noticing is Cruz is like sitting on that. He's waiting for them to give them that easy strike one. And he's destroying the baseball. Four leadoff homers already this month. And I want to say, two
on this
week. Yeah. So I think the move to the leadoff spot has been just really good in that pitchers are now pitching him a little bit different because they have to. And he's understanding that. And he's being a lot more aggressive early on in the counts. And so when pitchers are trying to get that strike one over, like, he's making them pay for it. He is all over those pitches right off the bat.
He is, but Jim, he's still getting walked too. Like, he's still being patient enough. Mm-hmm. He's got a really nice balance right now between aggressive and passive. Like, he's just seeing the ball so well right now. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, his chase rate is way down from last year. Yeah. You just love to see what you're seeing at. Like, he is looking like a superstar. Is what he's looking like
exactly what we were all hoping he'd blossom into. We were just hoping it'd be a little sooner, right? Don't care anymore. Yeah. It's coming. Yeah, it's here.
Yep. That's what he looks like. I mean, the numbers, like the stolen bases too, to go along with 8 home runs, 12 stolen bases. He's on pace for 30 something homers, 60 something stolen bases. There is a very short list of players who've ever done that. I think the list for 30-50 is just Ohtani, Acuna, Bonds, and Eric Davis. That's the list. That's it. And if Cruz slows down, like, he's going to do that. Like, he's well pacing over that mark. So it's really incredible to see. Like, I mean, he's putting together an MVP caliber offensive season. Now, defensively, it's a different story. But like, offensively, just...
But he's getting better.
An unreal year. He is.
He's getting a little bit better in the outfield. There was one play where I was kind of just on this trip, right? There was one play where I was really like, think you could have made that play. I forget who had hit it. It was a little blooper. It fell in front of him. He let it drop a few feet in front of him. I'm like, you were running, man. You could have slid and caught that or something. Like, but either way, it's so fun to watch right now. And he's making better throw decisions too. He's not just coming up firing and using that arm, which is, it's really nice to see. He's not giving up extra bases.
he looks more controlled out there.
Yeah.
Which can be a good thing and a bad thing. Like, it's good that he hasn't really made a mistake recently, but also what can make him so special sometimes is, like, you know, going all out, being aggressive. And like you mentioned, there was one play in particular where I think the old O'Neill Cruz would have just gone for it. And the new one was a little bit hesitant. Like, I'm going to just let this drop in for a single as opposed to risking, you know, a triple. So there's good and bad with it.
Yeah. So if for you guys who don't know, Josh is behind the scenes, he's producing this whole thing. So he's got the buttons working. He's got it all going on right now, but you're exactly right, Josh. I mean, it would be really nice to just see him hose somebody at home though. When he does finally, he's got it all going and he decides to go ahead and let one rip, it's going to be special. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. He's throwing the ball harder than anyone else in baseball right now. His average arm strength is 96. He's throwing the ball like 96 miles per hour, like on average.
That's stupid.
So, like, but yeah, he's throwing it harder than any other fielder on the field in any position. So yeah, you do want to see him just like unload on a runner at some point, and he hasn't really gotten that chance. I thought he did do a good job today in particular on a ball in left center field with runners on second and third. Pham was kind of camped under it, but Cruz was like, nope, let me take this because my arm's better than yours. So he gets it and he keeps the runner from moving from second to third. So that was a really good play from him and something that you may not have seen him do 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So the progression is definitely there. And you know, he's average. So I'm glad you brought the 96 up because he's averaging 96. He's got 30 hits this year. Not necessarily, I shouldn't say hits. He's hit the ball 30 times over 100 miles an hour. That's stupid.
It's insane. It's insane.
That ball the ball he hit to end the game that he hit to Mike Trout was like 119.
Yep.
And he was mad about it. I'm like, you can't be mad. I mean, I understand why you're mad because you're a competitor and the game's over now. But you did your job. You hit the ball 120 miles an hour, basically.
Yeah, he killed that ball. Can't fault you. It just unfortunately was too close to the outfielder there. I think that was Trout out there when he did that.
Yeah.
So yeah. But he's been locked in. I've never seen him look this good at the plate before. And he's not really showing any signs of slowing down. And I think it's just like the approach is different. He's lifting the ball more. So he's still hitting the ball just as hard, but he's lifting it more. And so that's where we're now seeing the power numbers go up. Because before it was like, man, if he could just hit the ball in the air a little bit more, because he'd be hitting these 118, 119 mile an hour singles, just peppering him off the surf side wall out there and right. But now those balls are going over the fence. It's just really fun to watch him play right now.
Yeah, for sure. Random question here. You got Adam Frazier. I heard you talk a little bit about this on NS9 earlier, but it's got the hitting streak going on. But that ball that dropped in the ninth inning, the game we lost, are you putting him on the bench for a game for that? For not running? For not getting a second? Because it's not like he's not scorching the ball to get this hitting streak.
Yeah.
Do you give Triolo a start at second base or something?
I probably am. Yeah. I mean, I guess
just to prove a point.
Accountability, that's a tough decision. Shelton? Because then it's like, do you then bench Cruz every time he does something that isn't fundamentally sound? Or like if Cruz hits a ball off of the fence and he should have been on third, but because he wasn't running, it's only a double. Like, are you benching Cruz? No, I don't think you can do that. Now, Frazier isn't the same caliber player as Cruz. I don't know. I think Frazier knows he probably messed up there. It's a tough call to make.
Yeah.
There's not really a drop off going from Frazier to Triolo. I mean, neither of them really can hit. So.
Yeah.
But it's just the thing.
It's just the thing that I think it was Sherrington, you know, the talking about accountability across the organization. Sometimes we just don't see it, but whatever. I mean, it was just something fun to ask you. Yeah.
I'm okay with either. He knows he messed up.
Yeah. Josh says you just don't bench guys in the big leagues for one play. If it's something that keeps happening, maybe. Tell Acuna Jr. that.
Well, I think, too, it depends on the play. It depends on the circumstance. And it depends on the player, too.
I'll be honest. I don't know anybody who actually runs that to second.
I don't know. I do. I think most people, I think 50-50, you know, you're on second.
That's fair. Bobby Witt Jr. does. Listen, I don't take a lot of notes all the time. Josh does all this. And so I took a bunch of notes, and now I'm getting lost. So let's jump into the Paul Skene start. We take 2 out of 3 against the Angels, which I didn't expect, but I was hopeful for. They're playing decent ball right now, but to take 2 out of 3, even though we let that last one get away, I can live with that. We go to the Dodgers, and I think we're all thinking we're going to go 2-4 on this road trip. Could go 2-4 on this road trip very easily. But you got Paul Skene going game one. Lights are bright. And here's my first question for you, Jim. He shows up, obviously, 6 1/3, 5 hits, no runs, 9 Ks. It's the Friday night game on MLB Network. Does that matter to you? Is that important at all?
I don't know if it's important that, if it's a Friday night game on MLB Network. I think what is important is, like, there were eyeballs on this game watching Skene's Yamamoto. This was the game everybody was watching that night. There was hype leading up to it. You had the two best arms, you know, in the National League, arguably, going head to head. So the fact that he came, I'm more impressed with how he just responded to the Dodgers lineup than just like a head-to-head matchup with Yamamoto, because I mean, this is the best lineup that you're going to face. It's
top to bottom
with there's at least 3 Hall of Famers in this lineup, maybe 4 depending on how like Will Smith's career continues. I mean, he's one of the best catchers in baseball, it's like this is a really, really good lineup that he's facing, and he dominated him. Like he said, he showed up in front of a sold out Dodger Stadium, national TV, and it was just an outstanding start. So I don't think it mattered to him, though. Like, I don't know if that's going through his mind where it's like, you know what, I need to really buckle down and show up here. I don't think he cares if he's facing the Dodgers or if he's facing the Harrisburg Senators, like in a double A rehab game. Like, I think he's going to do the exact same thing no matter who he's facing, no matter what day it is, no matter where he's at, no matter who the opposing pitcher is, no matter what the moment is. I think he's like that locked into just doing his job that it doesn't matter to him.
Yeah. I thought it was a little important just for the fact that not necessarily MLB Network, right? It's national. Everyone's eyes are on. And we played a solid game. We actually played behind Paul Skene's. We played well. We played as a team. It was just a breath of fresh air for me, because I've seen so many times where we get a national game and it's just like we just lay an egg, right? But you get Paul Skene's out there who is just shoving, and then the questionable call of the game for me was sending him back out for the 7th. You know, he said before the season started, I'm here to pitch. Like, and they said, we're taking the reins off, like no safety net thing here. We're letting him go. And they actually proved that Friday night. And I'm not questioning it as in like, would I have done that? Cause I would have let him go out. But just Derek Shelton saying, you got one hitter and that's it, no matter what. I feel like he probably could have got through the 7th inning, Jim. I'm not going to lie. He was feeling it, but that's the questionable part, right? You know, do you let him go out for that? Do you let him try to keep going? I don't know.
Yeah, I think in that instance, what he went out to face Will Smith, and then it was Conforto and Muncy coming in after him. So I thought he was done after finishing that 6th inning. And then when he came back out for the 7th, I was like, oh, wow. And you look at to look to see like who was due up, and I was like, this kind of makes sense. Maybe back in, you know, pre 2020 or whenever the rule changed, you're like, you maybe don't do this because you can bring a righty in and then you can just bring a lefty in. But the fact that like the three batter rule now exists, do you want a lefty facing Will Smith? Probably not. Do you want lefties right. facing Conforto and Muncy? Probably. So it made sense in the situation to just say, hey, you know what? You're in the game right now. Yeah, you've thrown 103 pitches, I think it was at that point. But go out there and get Will Smith. That's all you got to do. Just focus on Will Smith. You don't have to do anything else. Get Will Smith, and then you're done. So that was, I thought it was the right call. I think it's something, mm-hmm. I think I would have done the same. And it ended up working out just perfectly fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I mean, I saw, I think it was Pitching Ninja or somebody tweeted a video overlay showing his pitches. Like, I think it was like 9 of them. So they came out of the exact same spot. Like, good luck, MLB.
It's, when I saw that overlay, I was just like, how can anyone possibly hit this guy?
Yeah, I think it was Sean. Was it Sean Casey on MLB Network? He's like, you can't game plan for that. There's no game plan. It's a guess.
Well, he has so many good pitches that he can locate and use at any count at any time. Like you got to gear up for 98, 99. Like you have to. And then once you think it's a fastball, he throws the splinker that's like 95 and it darts down 5 inches and you have no shot. You have no shot of hitting that thing if you're looking at a if you're looking fastball. And then if you're not looking fastball and he throws you a fastball, you have no shot of hitting the fast. Like his arsenal is deep. He throws 7 different pitches and they're all really good. I've never seen a pitcher throw this many pitches like this good. Cause like you see guys like Darvish where like Darvish will throw like, I don't know, Darvish was what, like 12 pitches or whatever. But like, he doesn't really throw 12 pitches, but like Skeens is throwing 7 different pitches 5% of the time or more. Like he mixes them up all pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, be aggressive early with Skeens. And that it's literally things that I've seen people talking about is his strikeouts are down just a tiny bit. I mean, obviously Friday night he had 9, but yeah. But he's had some starts where he's had like what, 4 or 5 Ks. And that's exactly what, if you get to 2 strikes, you're done. So people are trying to put the ball in play earlier in the count. And if you don't, good luck. I don't know. Yeah. It's why it's so fun to watch.
He's the best pitcher I've ever seen. Like which is just crazy to say that he's only like, he's 20. He hasn't turned 23 yet. And it's like I was saying this last year. I was just like he's the best pitcher I've ever seen. And I was saying this like at start 3. I'm like, I've never seen anybody this good. And it was really the splinker has changed it all.
He hit 97 with the splinker the Friday night. 97.
It's stupid. I couldn't even imagine Wild. Seeing what that pitch looks like.
Yeah.
Like if you're in the batter's box and you're like, all right, I'm sitting fastball, thinking 99's coming down the middle. And all of a sudden, this 97 mile an hour monster of a pitch that you've never seen before, he just invented out of the blue, just like dives down at your feet. And you're like, what just happened?
Yeah. So we get through this game stuff, right? And you see Santana coming out for the 8. I was driving home. Okay. I'm going to admit something on here. I was driving home from work and I had it on my phone on my dashboard. And I saw Santana coming out, and I'm like, wait, what? I was like, there's only one other option that could be thrown in the 9th. Are they already going to give the closer role back to Bednar after 2 straight solid outings and 1 good outing? And sure enough, that's what they did. But however, you look at it in hindsight, Jim, and you had Santana throw against Pajes, Otani, Betts, and then eventually Freeman because which one of them? Pajes got on, I think.
Well, they couldn't get Pajes out all series. Yeah.
No.
Pajes got on base.
That's wild enough as it is. He had 11 hits in the series?
I think it was 11 for 13. Yeah.
11 for 13.
Got him. Yep.
Triolo doesn't have 11 hits this season. He has like 6, 7, something like that. Like, that's how crazy of a series that was. His batting average jumped 100 points.
Yeah.
But so you had Santana actually throw against basically 1, 2, 3. And then you have Bednar throw against the meat. So I don't know. Did Derek Shelton kind of sneaky do a good move there? Like saying, let's get Santana the most difficult part in the eighth inning and let Bednar throw against another difficult, albeit, but a little less difficult in the ninth.
Yeah. I mean, if you're of the mindset where like you really shouldn't have a closer, like a designated closer, you should just pitch your best pitchers in the biggest situations. The situation in the bottom of the eighth was bigger. I mean, if you're in the ninth inning and you're up by 3 runs, that's not really a super high leverage situation, because odds are, I mean, your win probability at that point's what, 97%? You're up by 3 with 3 outs to go. Like, you know, but in the eighth inning, it's a little bit lower, especially when you're facing Ohtani, Betts, Freeman. So,
yeah.
And I think that's what's, it just makes me frustrated, because I feel like this whole week, the Pirates, they played good baseball for most of the week. And for most of the week, I thought Derek Shelton pulled some good strings, like at times. And that was clearly one of them. I mean, yeah, you look at it and that worked out. Clearly it worked out. And that was the plan going in, and it worked. He used his best pitcher against their best hitters, and it worked. But then he does things in other games where you're just like, Derek, what are you doing? But no, that one worked out.
We'll get there. Yeah. But honestly, just speaking on Bednar's behalf, it did feel pretty good. Bednar locating the curveball at the bottom of the zone and blowing a fastball by some guys made me feel good. It made me feel like old Bednar might just be back if, big if there, he continues to locate that curveball.
Yeah. I mean, that was the problem. The fastball, I feel like, has always been good. He didn't really lose it. I don't know if he was locating it, but you know, in the greatest locations. But no, it doesn't matter how good your fastball is if you have nothing else to play off of it. And you know, you kind of saw that today with Bailey Falter. Like, Bailey Falter's off-speed stuff today was atrocious, right? And so it didn't matter how good his fastball was; he was going to get shelled. And that's what's been happening with Bednar. Just that curveball. If he can't throw that curveball for a strike and locate it at the bottom of the zone, you can just not swing at it and just sit on the fastball. And that's what people have been doing. Ball. So it's been refreshing to see. Like, he's looked good since coming back. I didn't really get to watch him a lot during his AAA time, but he has looked good so far.
Yeah, I'm excited because Josh and I are big fans of Bednar and
huge fans. Yeah.
Always just rooting for the best. Whether or not he's on our team, I'm probably going to be rooting for Bednar wherever he ends up. If he doesn't stay a Pirate forever.
Well, and this team needs him too. Like, the team needs him to be back to vintage Bednar. So yeah, like, rooting for David Bednar more than just about anyone else on this team. Yeah.
So after game one, the only question I had for Shelton was, where was Gorski at? Because you bring him into the lineup, you bring him up, and you play him day one. Number one, he's just obliterating the baseball in AAA, just scorching the ball. So this dude is hot. You bring him up, which he's done at almost every single level he's ever played. First at bat, hits a bomb. I want him in my lineup. I don't need Tommy Pham anymore. I've seen enough of Tommy Scam.
You don't need Tommy Pham anymore?
I don't need to see anymore, man. I can't. When's the suspension? Can we extend it? Can we get a couple more games?
Right. Yeah, that was interesting. Because, he comes up, he hits the homer, and then he doesn't play for 3 games. He still hasn't started yet. He at least got in as a pinch hit appearance in today's game. But
yeah,
I feel like they're kind of just going to use him in that. Like, he's going to be a platoon bat. He's going to start against lefties, and that's all.
Yeah. Which is it's fine, but there are times when I ride the hot hand. Give Tommy Pham a few days off. I mean, he's had a major league career. I'm not going to say how good it or bad it was. He's had a career. So a few days off might get him a little reset, and he might be somewhat serviceable to us. If he's going to be here, I'm kind of want him to be a little serviceable, mm-hmm. no matter how much I like or dislike him. Personally, I'd just rather see him not on this team, but you know, at least give him a few days off and just let Gorski play. Who, honestly, like Gorski's a nice story, right? I don't think he's going to be a big leaguer for a long, I just don't see it, but he's hot right now. So I want to play him. Get what you can out of him.
Yeah. I mean, you just kind of hope that you can get like a little John Nagowski type 2 or 3 week run out of him. That's kind of exactly. your hope with Matt Gorski, because yeah, you look at like hitters with his profile historically, they don't have long-term sustained success in Major League Baseball. But when you can hit the ball as far and as hard as he can, if you get hot, like remember Aristides Aquino? Remember that guy? He like the Reds Vaguely. Called him up. Reds yes. called him up, and he yes. had like a 25 or 30 game stretch where he hit like 15 homers, and then he hit like 120 the rest of his career, and you know, got DFA'd 4 different times. But like, we need Matt Gorski to be our Aristides Aquino. That's what we yeah. need.
And I'll take it. Absolutely take that. We need any power. We need any more power that we can get, not just O'Neill Cruz. Which
no, I'm with you.
Which, you know, we saw a little bit today, you know, Kutch and Valdez back to back today. It was nice to see. Valdez is sneaky good. Like he's sneaky staying in this lineup and kind of one of those guys that might be playing just a tick above his potential, maybe. Cause he's another one of those guys where I don't know that he has a long career. Or he does, and it's just like a bench role guy. Like he's just a secondary player, which is fine too.
Yeah. I think ultimately he's a bench bat. Yeah. And I think it's because like he's a competent hitter. And mm-hmm. you look at his at bats, even before this little mini hot streak he's gone on, he was one of the few people in the lineup who was at least giving you like a professional at bat. Like he looked like yeah. he belonged in the major leagues, at least whenever he was up to bat. The problem with Valdez is like defensively, it's hard to put him anywhere other than first. Like, yeah. I mean, second base, I don't know if I don't feel comfortable with him at second base at all. And the bat is fine, but it's not like it's not good enough to make up for like dreadful infield play. Right. Yeah. So Josh brings up here, like when Horwitz comes back, can he take Frazier's spot? And like, I don't think he can. Because like I don't want Valdez anywhere near the second base position. I think Valdez is a good bench bat who you can use in pinch hit situations, but that's like about it once Horwitz is back. Because well, we've seen Valdez drop like routine throws right to his face on multiple occasions now. So
like, yeah,
first base, sure, whatever. Second base, I don't know.
He did play second base for Boston last year. And honestly, if it's just buying time till Nicky G gets back or until someone else can come along, I think I'm okay with it. And I'm having Frazier ready to go at all times for defense replacement by the seventh inning. Because I'll tell you what, Frazier's also going to give you a gritty at bat as a veteran late in a game. Like that's when he's going to get his bloop singles and stuff like that. And I'll take his at bat late in the game. I just don't need to see it all game, but I'll take Valdez's. You know, his at bats early on and suffer through his defense. But Frazier's made some plays this year that
yeah
have been, I've been like, okay, I see you, old man.
Yeah. Just some quick stats here because people are in the comments saying, you know, he was second baseman last year. Yeah, he was negative 11 defensive runs saved at second base. In 841 innings. That's not a lot of games. And then also negative 12 outs above average. So like yeah, he can technically stand in the spot where a second baseman should be positioned, but I can't really say that he can play the position, because I think you put Bucko Mike at second base, he can give you negative defense, negative 11 defensive run saved. Bucko Mike might give you negative 10.
Yeah, I get all that. And I get all that just to say,
screw it.
It's just a placeholder until we can get Nicky or a real second baseman back.
Yeah.
It's just to share the at-bats, right? Not necessarily share them. It's just to get our best at-bat, our best offense on the field rather than our best defense. Sometimes I think Pirates in general, the organization values defense more than offense. And sometimes there's a position or two where you can let that go.
Yeah.
And I'd be okay with it for now, at least till Nicky G gets back. I don't know.
It would be nice to not lose the bat, because the bat is at least it's average to above average right now, which you can't say that about too many people in this lineup.
Right. Bucko Mike's always firing them in here. So let's go ahead and jump over to Keller's start, which I thought was a gutsy performance. He didn't have his best stuff, but he still navigated through the same Dodgers lineup. And I thought he did a pretty good job. He gave up two runs.
You have 3 runs. Only 2 of them were earned though.
Yes.
In 6 innings. Yeah.
Yeah. And 6 Ks, only 1 walk. Mitch Keller's now down below a 4 ERA, which is good to see. I guess in the opposite side of the Skeens decision, you have Keller at 89 pitches, a guy who's used to going a lot of pitches. And we go ahead and decide to move on. Like, Jim, just bear with me for a second. If Keller goes to the 7th inning,
If he
gets through the 7th inning, Ferguson can throw the 8th. Skip Holderman. We can skip that out, because it's just brutal. And I texted Josh and I said, DFA him. He said, why? He's got 3 options. I said, okay. Well, I didn't fact check that first, but I just want him out of Pittsburgh. He's got to go down. Until he can be consistent with his stuff, his stuff's good. You know, we talked about that beforehand. His stuff is good, but if it's not consistent, or if you're throwing it right down the middle, like, these hitters are going to hit you. I'm just tired of seeing it.
Doesn't matter how good the stuff is if the location's awful. Doesn't matter. And you bring up a good point where Keller wasn't at 90 pitches, and he had just retired Edmund Smith Conforto 1-2-3 in the bottom half of the 6th.
He retired 9 straight,
Pirates take the
right?
lead. There was he gave up a run in the 5th.
Okay.
But he retired 8 straight. He retired 9 straight at one point.
Until
that Ohtani triple that Brian Reynolds kind of messed around in the corner. So there was that. But I mean, he was pitching really well. You take him out, you put in Ferguson in that 7th, and I get, like, it was Muncy, Pajes, Ohtani, so you had 2 lefties there. But like you mentioned, if you go Keller there and he's able to get you through that 7th, or if he's even just able to get you a couple outs in the 7th, and then maybe you bring in Ferguson to face Ohtani, right, with 2 outs, it changes the dynamic of the game. And then you don't have to go to Holderman in the 8th. I don't think you had to go to Holderman in the 8th anyways, but like, you have other options to go to in that 8th inning. Whereas clearly they went to Holderman. Hernandez homers on the 2nd pitch, and then he double by Edmonds, walk Smith. I mean, the guy can't get an out.
Yeah.
Can't get an out.
It's hard. As fun as it is to watch Skeens, and as fun as it is to watch sometimes when Keller doesn't have his A-plus stuff, navigate through a lineup and still get through it, it's miserable to watch Colin Holderman right now. Like, it's just miserable.
Well, you feel bad for him too, because it's like there's clearly just something off with him. Because you mentioned like the stuff's good. Like you can look at the stuff. He's throwing 98, 99 mile an hour sinkers. He's got a good sweeper. Like it moves a ton, but it's like he's just something's off. He's not locating it. And his confidence right now has to be completely shot. Like if you're Colin Holderman, you've got to be questioning your ability to get major league hitters out at this point. I mean, that's just human nature, because it seems like every single time you go out there, especially in a big moment, you blow it. And it's been a pattern now. It's been a repeating pattern. And you saw it yesterday when Shelton came out to go pull him. Like he just looked like a deer in the headlights. Like he was like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to do. Like it looked like he had no answer for like what he was doing.
Yeah.
And like I said, you feel for the guy.
Yeah. Well, obviously I feel for him, but I'm also at the same time done.
Yeah. It's Major League Baseball. Like you got to get people out. So
yeah, you're paid to do a job here. And if you're not getting it done, this is the accountability stuff, you know, that everyone's been talking about in the organization. We're going to hold everybody accountable. I just sometimes don't see it. Sometimes you do, but sometimes you don't. And, you know, if we're willing to send Bednar to AAA, I don't understand why we're not willing to send Colin Holderman to AAA. Like,
I was shocked. I wasn't shocked that they activated him so quickly, because like if he's healthy, you've got to activate him off the IL.
Yeah.
But you can activate someone and then option them immediately. Like you don't have to reinstate them to the 26 man roster like they did. That's the route I would have gone, because like he needs to go to Indianapolis and he needs to pitch there for a month and just dominate crappy 29-year-old quad A players who can't hit. Like that's what he needs to do. He needs to go out there and just dominate hitters for a good couple weeks. Then once he figures out, all right, I can do this. Like I'm better than these guys. Then you bring him back up. I was astounded that they reinstated him to the roster that quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I did hear Josh brings up here, you can also do rehab stint for like 15 to 20. I do believe it's 20 days, because we have
longer
now Horowitz. Like,
yeah, I think it's 30 days. Oh, it's 20 days.
Is it 30?
It's 20 days. Yeah, it's 20 days.
I think it's You're 20. Right.
Yep.
But we have, you know, Horowitz has now started his rehab stint.
Oh, there we go. It's 30 days.
So we're looking at a window here. You know, he might be back in 20 or so days. But I mean, two outings from Holderman that weren't very good on a rehab stint, just go ahead and, I mean, even if he's feeling healthy, just let that rehab stint go a few more outings or something. Like I just don't feel like he was ready to come back. Healthy or not, he wasn't ready to pitch in the Major League Baseball game again.
Clearly.
Like you said, activate him and option him. He's got options. You're not going to lose him. He figures out consistency, I will welcome him back to Pittsburgh. Until then, I just would rather see him pitch in Indy.
Yeah. And like Sherrod says here, like if you are going to bring him back, don't let him throw in the eighth inning against the Dodgers in a tie game, like on his first day. Like,
dare I say Shelton being Shelton?
Shelton being Shelton.
So Shelton's job is technically safe, because he went out to a road trip where everyone was expecting two and four at best. Before the trip started, 2-4 at best. We come back 3-3. But was it really Derek Shelton that got us 3-3? Or was it Derek Shelton that dropped us from maybe a 4-2 trip to a 3-3?
I was gonna say he was the reason they were 3-3 and not 4-2 or 5-1. Yeah. Like it's today's game, they lost. Today's game, they lost. Yes. The Dodgers were better than them today.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
That's baseball.
Yeah. But Thursday and Saturday, you were in a position to win both of those games, and your decisions backfired miserably.
Yeah.
And they backfired in a way that everyone saw coming. I think that's the worst part. Like it's different if you make a move and it's like, okay, this move makes sense and it just doesn't work out. Like I understand that, But when you do things where Pirates Twitter is like, this is stupid, and then the stupid thing happens, everyone's going to be like, why did you do the dumb thing that everyone knew was going to happen other than you? Like, that's kind of, that's the frustrating part, is like, the numbers clearly show that Carmen Maginski shouldn't be facing a lineup a second time.
Yeah.
We have a large enough sample size that he shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
The numbers show that Colin Holderman shouldn't be pitching to the Dodgers in the eighth inning of a tie game his first day back from the IL. Yeah. He did it anyways. So it's frustrating just when, you know, when, yeah, it's, everything's Josh fine.
From behind the scenes. Love it.
It's fun. It's just frustrating when the anonymous, nameless accounts on Twitter, like, no seemingly better. Know what they're talking about more than the guys, you know, being paid money for these decisions.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate that we actually went 500 to a point when it's just talking about Derek Shelton in general. But at the same time, on the exact same sentence, I can sit here and say, we just made it through that West Coast trip and went 3-3. You know, I feel fine about it. I don't feel great about it, but I feel fine. We didn't embarrass ourselves miserably. You know, we were in every game of that road trip except today's. And against the Dodgers, I'm okay not being in one of the three games. That's just you're facing the Dodgers, who everybody thought was going to break the single season win record this year. So I don't know. So we put out a tweet earlier today about Shelton, speaking of consistency at the beginning of the year. And I think he's finally starting to realize, or Josh and I are finally think that he's starting to realize it starts with the manager. He actually, here it is. Derek Shelton has been saying a lot over the years about consistency on offense. And I think he's starting to realize that consistency starts with the manager. And he ran out a lineup, the exact same lineup, twice. I don't know if that I didn't look at it close enough to know if that exact lineup came back out. But it was very close if it wasn't. So I think we found our leadoff hitter. I don't think that should change. You know, Reynolds has always been two. And that won't change. I like Kutch in the three spot. After that, you know, I'm still ready to see the one consistency change, and that's Pham. You know, we need to figure that one out. But overall, I think the consistencies, it was a little bit of a breath of fresh air as well.
Yep. Well, you look at the whole road trip. It was Cruz, Reynolds, Kutch. 1, 2, 3, every game of the road trip. And then Valdez was fourth every game except the Thursday game, which was against a lefty. So, and then it was Bart, other than the games that Davis started. So like, yeah, like he put out that same lineup pretty much the entire road trip, which, that's what we've been asking for, is like, show, like, the players need some consistency too. Yes. The fact that McCutchen played all six games too, that's impressive. I don't think we've seen that since he's come over, like, not have an off day throughout the whole week. And I wonder if some of that maybe had to do with, like, there wasn't a day game, you know, like, the, like there wasn't like a day game after a night game, other than today. But he's now trotted out the same lineup on three separate occasions, four after today. Cruz, Reynolds, Kutch, Valdez, Bart, Hayes, Frazier, Pham, IKF. That lineup has now been played four different times, which I don't think last year he played a lineup four times all year. Let me just double check. he didn't. He never used a lineup last year more than twice. This year he's used that one four times now.
And it's working to an extent. You know, guys are starting to get a little more comfortable.
It's so working to an extent. Yeah, I mean, I would agree. The offense has been a little bit better this last week than it was prior. It still goes through its stretches where it's just non-existent. But I think that's just because they've got bad players filling out half of that lineup.
Right. So we're getting somewhat close to the end of our time here tonight, but do we have a Skeens Davis connection right now? Is he going to be Skeens' almost like personal catcher?
Maybe.
Because he's caught the last, three or four of his starts?
Well, what was it? He came in one of them after an injury. And then I think he's taken the last two, right? So, but I mean, yeah,
Skeens
maybe.
Pretty good.
He's looked pretty good in those. I mean, I'm not really like a catcher's ERA kind of, I'm not a catcher's ERA believer, you know?
Okay.
But it's good. So I mean, that's something. I don't think Skeens really cares who he's throwing to, but if he's comfortable with Davis and Davis is comfortable catching him, I'll say this: Davis is the best framer on the team right now, which I don't think any of us would have imagined us saying at this point in the season. So, you know, you probably want your best framer out there with your best pitcher. You probably want your best framer out there more than he's been out there, but you can't really take Bart's bat out of the lineup.
Right. Let me ask you this. You're pitching to person X and you throw a curveball or a slider and they miss it. Hits off the glove. They don't block it, whatever. You throw that to another catcher. He does block it. He does catch it. It doesn't bounce. You'd rather throw to guy number two, right? I see Bart drop a lot of balls.
Yeah, that's a good point. You do want your catcher catching the ball. That's
you
a pretty,
feel more
it's a
comfortable to throw your pitches.
Yeah.
I would feel better throwing my pitch and having it land where I want it to land and knowing confidently that my catcher is going to make the play. So I can feel free to grip it and rip it.
Yeah.
That's I'll why say, I am think, a believer in the catcher pitcher catcher relationship. But
so I'm a believer in the pitcher catcher relationship. I'm not a believer that catcher ERA is a thing.
I got you.
Like,
I got
there's
you.
Like a stat out there
fair.
Where like the ERA when a catcher is catching, I don't believe in that stat. I think that is solely on the pitcher and the defense behind him as opposed to the catcher. But the pitcher catcher relationship is definitely a thing. I know when I was pitching back in high school, I preferred throwing to a particular catcher over another. But it also didn't mean like when the other catcher was in there, it didn't change anything I was doing. It was just a preference.
I was blessed in college with catchers. Our catchers we had two catchers that were really good. In high school, slim pickings, good luck. So I just threw whatever, you know, and just hope they caught it. But I don't know. I feel like I think there definitely was in summer ball, when I was playing, you know, up in Pittsburgh in summer ball. I definitely feel like there was one catcher that I would much rather throw to than the other. And I felt like my stuff was better when he was back there just because I had more confidence.
Yeah. But, so maybe it just depends on the pitcher.
Yeah. So that pretty much wraps us up here. So the LA trip overall, 3-3 could have been better. We were in all of them except that last one. Today, Monday, we do have off. Then we have the Cubs and Padres at home. They are all TBDs for our pitchers and theirs. My guess, best guess after a little tiny bit of research is we're going to have Heaney versus Imanaga on Tuesday, Wednesday. ? Majinski. I'm hoping not. Hoping there's a move to be made there. Versus Boyd, Matthew Boyd. Thursday would look like it would be Skeens Day versus Tyon Walker. So Cubs are hot. They're really hot. Outscoring their opponents by a billion. But hey, we at least have Skeens Day to look forward to.
Yeah. I feel like Imanaga has done fairly well against the Pirates too in his career.
Mm-hmm.
Just nasty, nasty splitter, kind of similar to what we saw with Sasaki on Saturday. That splitter, I know the last time we faced him, at least one of the times last year, just couldn't touch it. So yeah, it should be a good series. Imanagahini, I mean, you've got the best left-handed pitcher in Major League Baseball going up against Shota Imanaga on Tuesday.
I love it. Listen, so, after his last outing,
I like it.
Sheesh. Jim, it's been great talking some Buccos with you tonight. We appreciate you stepping in for Josh while he's down for the count and recovering. Any last thoughts before we shut it down?
No, it's a big week. It's a big week. Two really good teams coming into Pittsburgh, and you've got to at least tread water here for a little bit longer. You don't want to get buried in these standings, because right now you're 14th out of 15th in the National League. You can't really get worse than that at this point, because I don't think anybody's touching the Rockies, but you got to start digging your way out of that.
Yeah. Josh, you can go ahead and start the music. He says, you got to tell me when you want it. Hey guys, thanks for joining us tonight. The chat's been on fire tonight. We appreciate every one of you for chiming in. It's very much appreciated. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't yet, so you can keep an eye out for our daily shows starting back up whenever Josh's voice gets back, or maybe I'll pipe in on one or something. We'll see. But get those notifications, and hey, let's go Bucks.
Let's go Bucks. See you guys.
Thanks for listening to my dad and Uncle Jake on the Bridge to Bucktober podcast. Follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Bridge2Bucktober. Don't forget to subscribe so you know when new episodes are released. Clear the deck. Cannonball coming. And let's go Bucks.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.